Mediated conversation on SAFM.
28 minutes to 9, the time for your first mediated conversation of the week. There was confirmation last week about how our population is changing and growing and about how people are moving both into our country and out of our country and within our country. There's also more information about who's staying, who's moving into South Africa, who's leaving, which is having an impact on our demographics as well. The headline figure is that our population has grown to 60.6 million people. I suppose you'd really say that as 60,600,000 people currently living in South Africa. These numbers are not based on the last census. Those numbers are still being worked on. They're being based on what's called the mid-year population estimate, but they tell us about how our population is changing and what kind of population we may have in the future. So then, what is changing and how quickly is it changing is the question this morning. First, you'll hear from the Statistics South Africa themselves. The chief director responsible for demographic and population statistics is Diego Iturralde. Then you'll hear from an associate professor at the Faculty of Science at the School of Statistics and Actuarial Science at Wits University, Professor Rendani Mbabuba. And finally, the impact of all of this on our cities. Nosipho Hlatshwayo is Executive Manager for Programs at the South African Cities Network. We start then with the Chief Director responsible for Demographic and Population at Statistics South Africa, Diego Iturralde. Diego, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
How quickly is our population growing?
Well, I think it's an important question, and I think the short answer of that is that population changes very slowly, unless, of course, we notice events that are unexpected and radical. One such event could be the onset of COVID-19 2 years ago, and we can see through the results of the population estimates how that has impacted on the situation. But in terms of other processes that influence change in population, It's a very slow process when we observe it on a year-by-year basis.
You say these are based on the mid-year population estimates. How does that work? Yes. Where does that data come from?
So we make use of preceding censuses as our base. Obviously, the most recent census is the most important input into this demographic model. And then the model becomes updated by using other independent sources of data, such as the birth registry, the death registry, and any other administrative source of data that can inform us around the population of the country. This is then input into a demographic model, which comes with such other features such as model life tables and things like that. And the output of this model then is a projection of the population to the current and into future years.
It seems that there's growth in some population groups and declines in others. Is that changing our demographics? And I mean, if you look at sort of different racial groups, for example, it seems that there's some changes that we can see.
Absolutely. I think each population group has its own characteristics based on where they live, based on social, cultural features that are related to that particular population group. So, for example, the Black African group is much younger and has a slightly higher fertility rate than the white population group, which is in comparison much of an older population, lower fertility, its mortality is peaking at older ages, and it almost takes on the characteristics of a developed or European country, whereas as well as the Indian Asian group, whereas the colored and Black African group take on more characteristics of a developing country that one would find anywhere else.
I imagine this wouldn't be covered by these numbers and what we're talking about now, but I imagine the economic surveys that Statistics South Africa does that explains how and why that happens.
Absolutely. I think there are economics to that. There are, as I said, social, cultural influences that are related to that. The Southern African region as a whole has the lowest fertility rates on the African continent as it is anyway. But within that Southern African region, there is, of course, a lot of variety. Within South Africa, there's even a lot of variety. If we have to zoom in on fertility rates, we can see that provinces such as the Eastern Cape and Limpopo have a much higher fertility rate and have other of their own unique characteristics than provinces like the Western Cape and Gauteng, whose fertility rates are much lower and whose population growth is more dependent on migration than on natural population growth.
Well, I was going to come to that. Are the numbers able to tell you how much of a sort of population increase that we've seen is based on the number of births in South Africa and how much is based on migration, people coming into South Africa?
Yes. So the population number that we have published is based on a variety of assumptions. And if we have a look at the summary of these assumptions, we can see that about, nationally speaking, 1.18 million births took place in the last year. That's from July 21 to June 22. There were approximately 660,000 deaths in the same period, which is a little bit of a recovery from the year before as a result of COVID. And then for the same period, there is a net migration that's net international migration. If we're speaking at a national level of 100,000 persons. So put that all together, and we can see that our population grew from 2021 from just under 60 million, 59.96 million, to the 60.6 million that it is estimated at for this year.
So the figure of people who've migrated in the last year into South Africa, what is that, 100,000? Did I hear that correctly?
That's net international migration. So that's the difference between people coming in and people leaving. So the population estimate does not input the actual number of people who have come in over a certain period of time, because that may or may not be available in a particular country or in a particular province or district. So we use the concept of net international migration, which once again is an assumption based on the preceding censuses' international migration rates. We do adjust those rates based on changes that we see from year to year. If we're able to access some data sources that refer to the movement of people into South Africa for permanent reasons, we adjust that. If we come across something like COVID-19, which resulted in a huge slowdown in the movement of people, we also take that into account.
A large number of people in Southern Africa live in two places. They live in a city, so Gauteng, for example, and they also live for part of the year in the Eastern Cape. But they may also live in Zimbabwe or Namibia. I'm talking about the migrant labor system, which has become firmly entrenched in our economy. How do you take into account those people? Because they in a sense, have two lives.
Absolutely. So I think the notion of somebody having one place of residence is not a sustainable notion or a realistic one. I think you've given the example of somebody who works in Gauteng but comes from the Eastern Cape, and every time there's a holiday period or an extended long weekend, there's a huge commute of people to, whether it be the Eastern Cape or Limpopo or KZN. However, for the purpose of this, as I indicated earlier, we rely quite heavily on the recent population census, and the population census always makes reference to your main place of residence. Your main place of residence would be on an average, where do you spend most of the time? Where do you consume your services? Where do you pay your taxes? Where do you receive water, electricity, refuse removal, and any other municipal service? So on that basis, we make use of that particular concept. But I think it is reasonable to expect that from time to time, populations in one part of the country gravitate towards other parts of the country for specific reasons, and then we see a return to their main place of residence.
Are there figures here and in other data for how many people who are born in other countries are working in our economy consistently at the moment?
Well, when we look at the issue of the labour market, we would rather rely on estimates coming out of a specialised labour market survey. As you're aware, because we've spoken about this before, Statistics South Africa inserts a migration module into the quarterly labour force survey. At this point, it's being done every 5 years, but it is under review. We're also inserting a migration module into other surveys. And I think from the most recent one, which was in 2017, there is a module out in the field right now as we speak for 2022. But from the most recent one, we have an estimation of about 1.2 million foreign-born persons who are working. And by working, we define working as working for at least one hour per week in whichever sector, whether it be for pay or whether it be for kind.
Thank you very much indeed. Diego Iturralde is the Chief Director responsible for Demographic and Population at Statistics South Africa. Your mediated conversation continues. You with SAFM, 16 minutes to 9, to see how our population is changing. Professor Rendani Mbuba is an Associate Professor in the Faculty of Science at the School of Statistics and Actuarial Science at Wits University. Professor Mbuba, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen, and thank you for having me.
I don't know if you're on a speaker. You may be on a speaker. If you are, if I could ask you to use the handset, it would be helpful for us. Diego Iturralde made the point that a population changes slowly. We are seeing an increase in the number of people in South Africa. Were we expecting this kind of change to our population? Is this in line with actuarial models?
Exactly, Stephen. We're expecting this type of increase in our population. Pretty much because the forces that act on our population are pretty much well understood. And this is because our population growth is primarily driven by our fertility rates. And those have been declining over time, but still yield a positive differential in population. So we will still see, albeit a slowing growth in the population, but there will still be some growth in our population for some time.
We see some changes in population groups. As I understand it, the white population is dropping quite very slowly as a number and as a percentage. I mean, what's driving that?
That's significantly driven by a point that that Diego already mentioned, that you see differentials in fertility rates between different population groups. And we certainly see a lower fertility rate in the white population. We also have seen that the white population have been a net international migrator. So they have actually, we've seen a significant amount of them, but not, albeit not that large a driver, leaving the country as well.
Is it possible, or how possible is it, to predict what kind of changes we may see in the future? I mean, are we able to say in 20 years' time, this is how many people we're going to have in South Africa?
Yeah, certainly, Stephen. Yes, within a bound of confidence, we can certainly predict the future population in South Africa. And that, again, is because of understanding the processes of migration, the processes of fertility and birth, as well as the process of mortality and death. But you see now that there are certain shocks in the system that sometimes we're not able to anticipate, such as the onset of COVID-19 and what that has done for mortality. That has certainly slowed down population growth to some extent. And such shocks in the system occur from time to time. But certainly, the models that drive, the different decrements and increments in the population are quite well established and can actually allow us to predict this.
We talk about COVID-19, and yay, and you and Statistics South Africa already mentioned that this morning. There's another example playing out in Ukraine, where because of a war, 5 million people, I think it was 6 million people, left the country very quickly.
Exactly. So there's all sorts of external shocks to the system that, be it war, be it, perhaps something, not even in South Africa only, but perhaps something in the region that might result in significant, net positive immigration to the country. And obviously, pandemics is something that we still need to understand and perhaps look at the return periods as to, you know, after how, you know, what sort of, you know, probability an event such as COVID-19 is likely to reoccur in future.
As I understand it, I've seen predictions in the past that our population could get to 80 million, even 100 million in the future. I realize that demography, it's a science. It's not quite an exact science. Sometimes the population is decreased more quickly than people expect. Are those numbers still the predictions that we could get to that kind of level of population? 90 million people, 80 million people?
Yes, there's obviously a fair, so with projections like any other, there's a fair amount of uncertainty the further along in time you go. Because, you know, the amount of external influences certainly tend to increase. But over time, until we see a stabilization perhaps in our fertility rate, and of which they've been slowing down as the economic situation and perhaps more family planning is coming across. However, we certainly see still positive growth. It will take a significant amount of time for us to reach 8 or 90 million. But that's still a possibility, too.
This really shows that we need to plan. We will need to provide more people with water, with food, dare I say, with electricity. How important is it that government, that planners, look at these numbers and start planning properly? Someone needs to build schools, for example.
Yes, these numbers are significant for policy making and urban planning. I think in terms of, you know, resource allocation across the different provinces, I mean, we already know that Gauteng, even internally, is growing quite significantly relative to other provinces. So we certainly need to focus your resources in the right areas, and instruments such as population estimates are quite important in allocation of both financial capital and also, you know, planning urban centres, as well as, you know, equipping, you know, our young people as they come into the system through the education system and others to make sure that we've got enough places and proper systems and infrastructure to support them.
Professor, thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it. Professor Rendani Mbuba is an associate professor in the Faculty of Science at the School of Statistics and Actuarial Science at Wits University. In a moment, the situation within our cities. If we have more people and a growing population, are most of those people going to our cities? Nosipho Hlatshwayo is the executive manager for the programs at the South African Cities Network. They'll be on your radio in a moment, 11 minutes to 9.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
9 minutes to 9, the time. Continuing your mediated conversation around how our population is changing. Nosipho Hlatshwayo is the executive manager for programs at the South African Cities Network. Nosipho, good morning.
Good morning to you.
When we see the population of our country growing in this way, can I presume that most of these changes in our population are being felt in our cities? It's in the cities where the populations are growing the most?
Certainly, they are being felt in the cities. When we see population growth, and you correctly pointed out earlier on that it happens mainly in the cities. So what then happens is that you start feeling it because you might experience things like congestion. There may be, if the infrastructure is not taken care of, there may be some service delivery outages or disruptions and things like those. So certainly, cities are feeling the impact of population growth, and that is why it is important that they pay attention to these numbers that have been released.
Have cities planned for this? And I say that when we know there's a large number of people who are basically forced to live in informal settlements. I mean, maybe I'm too cynical, but that suggests cities aren't planning.
So, cities do a number of plans. There are plans that help them to plan for space, plan for infrastructure. But those plans need to be financed. A plan without an implementing instrument that is actually workable does not assist. So they do have plans. And I know for certain that one of the requirements for them when they do, for an example, the IDPs is to reflect on current population numbers as well as projecting into the future so that they are able to see what is the level of people that have access to those services. Now, the challenge is, yeah, as much as they would know the numbers, they only have a limited budget to roll out the services, because for most cities, except for a few, they rely on grants that they get from national departments for electricity, for an example, for water, libraries and the like. There's very few cities which have got a less percentage of their capital expenditure coming from their internal funds. So in those instances where you find that they don't have enough money, they are certainly going to be the ones that are impacted severely by population growth, as we have seen. I mean, informal settlements are just one of the few indications of what population numbers does, but also it talks to who is migrating into the cities. Can those people be able to sustain themselves, or are they relying on the state in terms of people not working?
Are some cities better able to do this than others? They just have more resources, or maybe even have more land available, for example, to plan with?
There are certainly cities that are able to cope better with this. In the recent State of the Cities report, we gave a breakdown of the numbers in some of the cities. We find that the larger metropolitan municipalities tend to be able to cope better than your smaller metropolitan municipalities. So larger, we're talking about your Tshwane's, your Johannesburg, Cape Town, eThekwini. And then you find the smaller ones. For an example, your smaller municipalities, your smaller metro municipalities, your Mangaung and your Buffalo City. And it also comes down to two factors. Number one, as I said earlier on, their financial resources being able to respond to this. But number two, their capability, having the necessary skills and the conducive environment for them to be able to deliver and respond to population changes. And interesting enough, where cities are able to deal with this, you find that the citizens, when the surveys are done, like the quality of life survey, which is done in the Gauteng city region, those numbers tend to be higher than in cities where they're not able to deliver those services and respond to population growth.
I would imagine over time we're also likely to see some cities losing people and some cities gaining people. So you might find that maybe mining was a big industry in a particular place. I don't know. I think of Velkom for some reason. I probably got that wrong. And some cities will actually gain people. So there'll be movement between cities. Can cities themselves see that that's happening? I know in North America, for example, some cities have just become, I forget the name now, Flint, Michigan. There we are. Places like that, you know, the car industry has changed in America. So you have these big cities in Detroit, and suddenly they've become emptied out. I don't know if that could happen here in some places.
I don't think at the scale that it has happened in some of the American cities, and there are a number of factors to that. But if you look at the recent concept of semigration that we've all been exposed to since COVID-19, we certainly are seeing a number of people who are moving from big cities to smaller towns, right? And they are still able to keep their linkages, whether economically or socially, with the big towns. So most of these people are not going to outright sell their properties, but they're just going to look for a smaller home in a smaller town. What it then does for the bigger city is that they lose some of their revenue, because a person that was paying, let's say, R1,500 for electricity is no longer paying that. It's being paid to a smaller municipality. But those changes that we see happening, cities should be concerned about them, because they also have an impact on their financial sustainability. And we do know that those that are able to afford to pay, that's how the system is designed, they also help to subsidize those that cannot pay. So the more you lose people that have got that buying power in the cities, the more the vulnerable or your indigents are also exposed.
There's a lot going on with all of this. What happens if we don't plan? And I mean, I think there is a risk that this may not be happening in some councils. But if we don't plan, are we going to end up with many more millions of people looking for land near cities and being forced to live in a shack? More contestations over land, like we've seen particularly in Cape Town, for example.
Yeah, so if we don't plan, there's a lot of negative things that are going to happen. Earlier on, I said streets are going to be congested because we did not anticipate for the growing population, and you're still stuck to people using their motor vehicles to go to, you know, places of economic activities. We might see increasing population pollution levels taking place. You know, your sanitation systems not being able to cope, but just generally, socially, because you might not have an economy that grows at the rate that the population is growing, meaning that people are not being able to be absorbed into the labor market, we might also experience an increased number of some of the social ills that we are currently faced with. And if you think about the fact that the numbers that were released are saying that 28.07 of those people that are in South Africa are young people, meaning it's people that are younger than 15 years. If we do not plan for addressing their needs in terms of, you were talking about schools earlier on, sports fields and libraries, we need to assist in deterring them to engaging on some of the negative activities that lead to social ills that we are currently faced with.
Nosipho, thank you very much indeed. Nosipho Shlatshwayo is the Executive Manager for Programs at the South African Cities Network. My thanks also to Professor Rendani Mbuba, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Science at the School of Statistics and Actuarial Science at Wits University. And starting us off today, the Chief Director responsible for Demographic and Population Statistics at Statistics South Africa, Diego Itauralde. Well, that is us for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Plenty to come. Catherine Stanza from Mdu, from Banyana, from myself. Look after yourself. Have a good Monday. We'll see you on Tuesday. You're there.